Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We come to you 7 days a week with an interesting way to improve your American English skills. Here's how it works. After you listen to the program, download the audio and save it as a podcast. You may find the printed words we say on the Learning English website. Print each story and then listen to the audio again as you read along with us. If you want to learn how to speak English in the American style, start slowly at first. Just say a few words or one sentence, then say two sentences, then an entire paragraph or section. If you do this every day, it will not take long until you will find that you have made great progress. Okay, let's get started today with a story about the movies. Years ago, the American writer Kurt Vonnegut said, "There was one story that would always make $1 million, Cinderella." In Hollywood and in today's economy, it is more like $70 million. And that's just a start. Cinderella the movie made that amount in ticket sales when it opened earlier this month. But the merchandising deals linked to the movie are also hugely valuable. Business and entertainment news at the same time, from Anna Mateo.
The respected British actor and movie maker, Kenneth Branagh, directed Cinderella. It stars Lily James as Ella, and Academy Award winner Kate Blanchett as her evil stepmother. Reviews of the movie were mixed. Stephen Ray of the Philadelphia Inquirer called the film a winning redo. Richard Corliss of Time magazine wrote that Disney finally got Cinderella right. Other critics were not as happy with the film. Sarah Stewart of the New York Post suggested the storytelling lacks substance. She wrote, "This Cinderella is all dressed up with nowhere very interesting to go." So the artistic success of the film is open to debate. What is clear, however, is the movie's business success. It is a hit in the theaters, but it is also a hit in retail. And Disney widened its usual market for Cinderella products. There are products connected to the Disney film, targeted not only at little girls, but women too. For example, the famous shoe designer Jimmy Choo partnered with Disney to create a version of Cinderella's glass slippers, or shoes. You can buy them for about $5,000. At that price, you would not want to lose one at the ball, even if that is the way you get your prince. Several other shoemakers also accepted Disney deals to design versions of the famous footwear. The makeup company MAC quickly sold all its products with official links to Cinderella, but lucky buyers were soon selling the products on the online marketplace eBay for many times the original price. HSN is a popular television and online retailer of jewelry, clothing, and objects for the home. The marketer is now an exclusive seller of Cinderella products. So is there anything left for the children? Those people we think of as the traditional audience for the age-old fairy tale? Yes, you can find toys and other children's products at the American retailer JCPenney. Of course, you can also visit a Disney store. I'm Anna Mateo.
are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Now, business news of another kind. Maybe it isn't as much fun as talking about movies, but it is very important to nearly everyone. The subject is energy. Russia says it will stop sending natural gas to Europe through Ukraine and will start sending it through Turkey. Turkey welcomes the decision. For 10 years, the country has aimed to be a major energy hub or distribution center. But some critics say Turkey is not prepared to play such a role. Christopher Cruz explains.
Attila Yeşilada is a senior partner at Global Source Partners, a research group in Turkey. He says Russia's decision is a major opportunity for his country.
Turkey simply becomes the next Ukraine, and Turkey could become a major energy hub that supplies Europe.
But Mr. Yeşilada says Turkey has a lot of work to do before that can happen. He says Turkey will need to understand the gas market, know the buyers, predict prices, and build places to store natural gas. He says being an energy hub will require a big investment, but it may also bring a lot of money and political power. Volkan Özdemir is an expert at the Institute for Energy Markets and Policies in Turkey. He agrees with Mr. Yeşilada that much work must be done before his country is ready to become an energy hub. He also says Turkey should work to become a place where energy is bought and sold, not just a place through which energy is transported. He says economic sanctions have weakened Russia. He says that means Turkey is in a good position to convince Russia that the two countries should become energy partners. However, one expert says European countries are not happy that Turkey will be replacing Ukraine as the distribution center for Russia's natural gas shipments. Sinan Ulgin is a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Institute in Brussels. He says he is not sure that contracts Russia has signed to supply the natural gas through Ukraine can be legally changed.
Because as things stand, these terms stipulate that the gas will be supplied through Ukraine. And these are long-term contracts, so it's an open question whether the terms can be negotiated.
A top official of the huge Russian energy company Gazprom dismissed such concerns in January. Alexei Miller warned that Europe will have to make changes in its energy centers within 2 years to accept natural gas from Turkey. Last month, Mr. Miller and Turkish Energy Minister Taner Yildiz spent 4 hours in a helicopter looking for possible places for a new natural gas supply route. Turkey is in a strong negotiating position because Russia wants to make the change from Ukraine to Turkey quickly. Gazprom has already reduced the price of natural gas it is selling to Turkey 2 times, and a major pipeline is being built across Turkey from Azerbaijan to Europe. That pipeline will strengthen Turkey's role as a major supplier of energy to Europe. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to As It Is from the Learning English Office of VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Most children have heard their parents, at one time or another, yell, "Sit up straight," or "Don't slouch." In the past, this was usually heard at the dinner table, as children ate dinner. But these days, it is also heard around another activity, video games. 10-year-old Awayesh Batliwala from Mumbai, India, admits he spends 3 to 4 hours each day playing games on his tablet computer. His mother, Metzabin, became concerned when her son started saying that his neck hurt. She said, "My son started having neck problems around June or July. The pain slowly spread to his hand and his back. He plays for hours on the iPad and mobile phone. This is what has caused the problem." Sadia Vanjara is a physical therapist. She says the number of young children with chronic pain in their necks, arms, and shoulders is on the rise. Dr. Vanjara says the pain is not from aging, accidents, or disease. It is from poor posture or body position while playing video games.
They are not aging. They haven't had an accident. Their age is like under 10. They are not complaining. Their blood reports are fine. Their x-rays are fine. Their MRIs are fine. Then where is the culprit? And that is the very common thing that's happening amongst all children, and that is the smartphones and the gadgets.
This is a problem in many parts of the world. But there are more smartphone users in India than anywhere else in the world except China. Networking equipment company Cisco estimates that the number of smartphone users in India will increase from 140 million today to 651 million by 2020. 19-year-old student Nita Jamil says she feels pain in the finger which holds the weight of her smartphone most of the day. She says she uses her smartphone 24/7. This means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or all the time. Dr. Vanjara says the best treatments for the pain are daily exercises.
Start stretching it in all the possible directions that you can.
Correct posture can help prevent pain. Dr. Vanjara teaches children how to hold their gadgets correctly. She tells a patient to hold the gadget in front of the face. She says that bending the head down to look at the device strains the neck and creates an unhealthy bend to the back. Sadia Vanjara predicts we will see not only physical, but psychological and emotional problems resulting from overuse of gadgets. Experts advise taking breaks from using a computer or other device often. Stand up, stretch your legs, back, shoulders, and arms. And when your work or schoolwork is done, unplug and exercise. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. June 18, 1910, was an exciting day for Theodore Roosevelt. It was the day that the former American president returned from a long trip to Africa and Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people gathered in New York City to welcome him home. There were speeches and bands,
and a parade. This week in our series, Frank Oliver and Tony Riggs tell us about Teddy Roosevelt's trip. They also tell us how political problems hurt his friendship with President William Howard Taft.
It was the perfect end to a trip that began 3 weeks after Theodore Roosevelt completed his presidency. Most of the trip was a huge success. In Africa, Theodore Roosevelt spent months hunting wild animals. He shot many lions, elephants, and other animals. He brought all of them back and gave them to the Smithsonian Institution. After hunting in Africa, he and his wife Edith went to Europe.
The Roosevelts visited Italy and met the king and queen. They visited Vienna and met the ruler of Austria and Hungary. In Germany, they met Kaiser Wilhelm II. Kaiser Wilhelm invited the former American president to watch a big parade of German troops. He told him, "You are the first civilian who has ever joined the Kaiser in reviewing the troops of Germany." The two men were photographed shaking hands. On the back of the photograph, the Kaiser wrote, "When we shake hands, we shake the world." The Roosevelts met the kings and queens of Norway, Belgium, and the Netherlands. They met the crown princes of Sweden and Denmark. And while in England, Mr. Roosevelt served as America's official representative at the funeral of King Edward VII.
Theodore Roosevelt made a number of speeches at several universities, including Oxford and the Sorbonne. Yet all these activities did not keep him from reading newspapers and letters from home. The news troubled him. He had led the Republican Party with great success. Now the party seemed to be falling apart. It had split into two groups. One group included conservatives who supported President William Howard Taft. The other group included progressives who opposed Taft. Theodore Roosevelt had worked hard to get William Howard Taft elected. President Taft had been in office a little more than a year, yet in that short time, he had broken almost completely with the progressives who had supported Roosevelt.
The split developed because progressives expected Taft to rule as Roosevelt had done, with energy and emotion. They wanted a man who could excite people with dreams of social progress. Theodore Roosevelt was such a man. William Howard Taft was not. He was a big, slow-moving man. He refused to make quick decisions. As a former judge, he depended on facts, not emotion, to make decisions. President Taft did much to carry out the reform programs Theodore Roosevelt had begun, but his methods led people to believe that he was really trying to kill the programs.
Taft wrote to Roosevelt shortly before the former president sailed for home. "I do not know if I have had harder luck than other presidents," he said. "But I do know I have succeeded far less than others. I have been trying to carry out your policies. but my method of doing so has not worked smoothly. A few weeks later, Theodore Roosevelt returned home. In a speech to those who welcomed him in New York, he said, "I am ready and willing to do my part to help solve America's problems, and these problems must be solved if this country is to reach the high level of its hopes." To President Taft, Roosevelt wrote, "I will make no speeches or say anything for 2 months, but I will keep my mind open as I keep my mouth shut."
President Taft invited Theodore Roosevelt to visit him at the White House. Roosevelt said he could not. However, he did meet with many of the progressive opponents of the president. Later, he met with Taft at the president's summer home in Massachusetts. It was not a happy meeting. The two friends were tense. By this time, Roosevelt had decided that he agreed with the progressives. He believed President Taft had turned back many of Roosevelt's policies.
Roosevelt decided it was time for him to go to the American people. He accepted an invitation to a celebration in Wyoming. He traveled west by train. He stopped in many towns and cities to make speeches. He spoke of party unity. He tried to heal the split that had weakened the Republican Party. But the policies he proposed were progressive. Conservatives refused to support them. President Taft could not understand Roosevelt's purposes. "If I only knew what he wanted," Taft said, "I would do it. But he has told me nothing. I am deeply wounded. He gives me no chance to explain my position or to learn his."
Theodore Roosevelt hoped his speaking trip would help Republican Party candidates win in the 1910 congressional elections. His efforts seemed to fail. Republicans were defeated in many states. For a year after the party's defeat in the congressional elections, Theodore Roosevelt remained silent. Then, near the end of 1911, America's political parties began to prepare for the presidential election that would be held the following year. Roosevelt was sure Taft could not be reelected. Taft had become very conservative. He had close ties to business interests. What the people wanted, thought Roosevelt, was a progressive president. What they wanted was a man like himself. So Theodore Roosevelt began to speak out again in opposition to many of the things President Taft was doing. For example, President Taft had proposed treaties with Canada, Britain, and France. Roosevelt criticized them.
Taft was troubled. He told a friend, "It is very hard to take all these blows from Roosevelt. I do not know what he is trying to do, except to make my way more difficult. It is very hard to see a close friendship going to pieces like a rope of sand." By now, it was clear to Taft that Roosevelt wanted to be the presidential candidate of the Republican Party in the election of 1912. Earlier, this would have pleased Taft. He would have been happy to leave the White House. But the situation was different now. Roosevelt had changed. Taft felt that the policies he proposed seemed too extreme. Taft decided it was his duty to oppose Roosevelt and the progressives. He would seek re-election. Taft believed he could win the Republican nomination for president. He still had the support of many party leaders.
4 months before the Republican nominating convention opened, several progressive Republican governors appealed to Roosevelt. They urged him to declare himself a candidate for president. Roosevelt, they said, was the man to lead the nation into a new era of social progress. Then Taft made a strong statement against the progressives. "They are seeking," he said, "to pull down the temple of freedom and representative government." A reporter asked Roosevelt to answer Taft's statement. Roosevelt said, "My hat is in the ring." That meant he was a candidate. Now the conflict was in the open, and Roosevelt was ready to fight.
In his speeches, Roosevelt criticized Taft bitterly. In a voice shaking with hatred, he said Taft was controlled by conservative politicians. He said Taft stood in the way of progress. He said Taft was disloyal. Taft had to answer. In one speech he said, "This tears my soul. I am here to answer an old and true friend who has made many charges. I deny all those charges. I do not want to fight Theodore Roosevelt, but I am going to fight him." After the speech, a reporter looked for the president. He found him sitting alone, his head in his hands. His eyes were filled with tears. "Roosevelt was my closest friend," Taft said.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Frank Oliver and Tony Riggs. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.